Welcome back to issue 38 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that is getting awfully lonely up here in the Fortress of Solitude. I'm one of your hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm your very lonely co-host, David McVeigh. How are you, Richard?
I'm feeling incredibly good, David. And we should remind callers, if they are feeling lonely at any stage, they can always call us on the Fortress of Solitude hotline. That's 1-800 Fortress.
I always, whenever we think of Fortress of Solitude, all I can hear is Team America going, "I'm so lonely." See, Superman sitting up in his fortress going, "I'm so lonely."
There's always that classic story that Kevin Smith used to tell about, you know, when he was wanting to do something in the Fortress of Solitude, and the studio head, this is back when he wrote the script for Superman, he's like, the studio head said, "Can we have an army up there in the Fortress of Solitude?" It's like, "Dude, it's the Fortress of Solitude." So I'll always remember that. But look, David, it's one thing that isn't lonely is this week's episode.
That's very, very true. And I believe we are jam-packed with news and entertainment.
Jam-packed is putting it lightly, because in this issue, DC announces a super crossover possibly involving the Fortress of Solitude. And Alan Moore isn't ready to pimp out his log cabin just yet, speaking of Fortresses of Solitude. Then geeks have cause to rejoice on the road to the Avengers 2. Plus, our kick-ass pick of the week, Batman Earth 1. But first, as always, our vintage clip of the week.
High atop one of the hills which ring the teeming metropolis of Gotham City, a large house rears its bulk against the dark sky. Outwardly, there's nothing to distinguish this house from many others. But deep in the cavernous basements of this house, in a chamber hewn from the living rock of the mountain, is the strange, dimly lighted, mysteriously secret Bat's Cave, hidden headquarters of America's number one crime fighter, Batman. Yes, Batman, clad in the somber costume which has struck terror to the heart of many a swaggering denizen of the underworld. Batman, who even now is pondering the plans of a new assault against the forces of crime. A crushing blow against evil in which he will have the valuable aid of his young, two-fisted assistant, Robin the Boy Wonder. They represent American youth who love their country and are glad to fight for it. Wherever crime raises its ugly head to strike with the venom of a maddened rattlesnake, Batman and Robin strike also. And in this very hour, when the Axis criminals are spreading their evil over the world, even within our own land, Batman and Robin stand ready to fight them to the death.
These boxes are usually locked.
I know it. Captain Arnold, please.
Captain Arnold speaking.
I have a nice little package for you. You'll find it at the corner of First and Maple.
Heavenly. Yeah, what's doing, Captain?
It's the Batman again. He's at the corner of First and Maple. And this time, I'm going with you.
I'm warning you, Dr. Decker will make you regret this.
Shut up!
Dr. Decker? Who's that?
Never mind. You'll find out.
Let's wait around and see Captain Arnold's face when he gets here.
No time for that. Don't forget, I've got a date.
Oh, my. His two-fisted assistant.
No time for that, Robin. I got a date.
Oh, my God. I remember watching that old serialized Batman. That's the not the radio show. That's the old serial. Is that right?
Yeah. No, I hope you didn't watch that on its first run, David.
No, I'm not that old. No, there used to be a show on Saturday nights here in Australia called Midnight Matinee. And they used to show old movies and old serials. They showed the old Flash Gordon series and stuff like that. And they showed that old 1940s serialized Batman series. And I always remember because he just looked really dorky because he had like his ears were floppy and his car was just a sedan.
Well, in that opening sequence, you heard the narration over the top. It was just him sitting. Yeah, it was just an old sedan, but he was just sitting stock still at a desk. As the camera panned in, and then when he said, "You know, he's two-fisted," you know, assistant, you know, Robin just jumps in from the side. It's kind of weird because it's got a little bit of the campness of the 1960s version, which would obviously come 20 years later. But it's got this very serious, like, sort of almost noirish kind of feel to it. This is, of course, from 1943, and you would have heard in there when they were talking about the Axis powers across the world. So this is obviously made as one of the serialized films that would have played with like newsreel footage and that sort of thing during the cinemas.
Yeah. No, it's always fascinating going back and looking at that. There's an old serialized Superman as well that was always fun to go back and look at as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah. Look, these are great, and there's stacks. These all seem to be freely available online. So, and they released them as a DVD a few years ago. And I haven't seen them all, but it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, cool. Richard, I need to know, what have you been reading this week?
Look, I read a lot of Guardians. I didn't read all of it, like I said I would last week, but I am loving that series. Guardians of the Galaxy, this is.
Yeah.
It's just such a great series, and I really, really absolutely can see what they're going to do with the TV show. We'll get to a TV show later. What they're going to do with the film for this thing. And if they keep that same level of humor and just, you know, nonstop action and just the way those characters work together. Or not work together, as the case may be.
Well, they're completely dysfunctional. Have you gotten to the twist on that yet?
Oh, about how they came together.
Yeah.
Okay.
yes, that's Star-Lord's a bit of a cheeky character.
Yeah, like I've said, and as you said, I've fallen in love with Rocket Raccoon.
I also absolutely adore Mantis.
Mantis is great too. Yeah, no, I love all the characters, and I think this is the thing. This is if in an ideal world, we would have, you know, a Rocket Raccoon film and a Star-Lord film, you know, like, leading up to the Guardians of the Galaxy, because all of them deserve their own little film and then, you know, them coming together and the thing. But as the story, because, you know, where the Guardians of the Galaxy series starts, and we will be talking about this in full in a few weeks, where that starts, they've just been through this massive Marvel-wide event called Annihilation.
Mm.
And there's references to that constantly throughout most of the series.
I have Annihilation loaded on my iPad right now. I'm going to start reading it.
I'm waiting to finish off the last of these. I know I'm doing it in the wrong order, but I'm going to read this Guardians thing as a standalone thing, as you did.
Yeah.
And then go back and read all the Annihilation and Nova and Rocket Raccoon stuff and stuff as well, because I'm absolutely loving it. But, yeah, look, I kind of fell by the wayside because a couple of other really cool books came out this week that I just had to catch up with. One of them was, of course, the latest issue of Batman. Now, Scott Snyder, how do you follow up the biggest comic event of the year? Which was the Court of Owls. Well, he does it by not consciously doing it. He sort of takes the Joss Whedon approach and says, you know what? I'm going right back to character now. And he focuses not on Batman, not on any of the other peripheral, not on any of the characters that we've met so far, but on a new character called Harper Row, who's this girl who lives on the skids. And it's just such a really great, it's kind of like, you know, those Doctor Who episodes where the Doctor's not in it much, but it concentrates on this character and somehow the Doctor pops into their life and makes it all the better.
Well, it's kind of a little bit like the early episodes of the last season where we introduced Amy Pond.
Yeah, exactly like that. And this is exactly what this episode of Batman, this issue of Batman feels like. It's kind of like I'm adding another character and you really get a sense of how Bruce Wayne, how Batman and how his whole network is actually making Gotham a better place, you know, one person at a time. And it's just such a beautifully written and beautifully illustrated book from Scott Snyder and some of it's written by James Tinian IV, who's been writing some of the backup stories during Court of Owls, but he's also wrote that annual with Mr. Freeze a few months ago. Hmm. So it's a really good book. And next issue we're going to get next issue will be issue 0, which is an origin story, but issue 13, it's the return of the Joker. So this is kind of like a little character episode before we start on the next big arc, and the next big arc is going to involve the Joker. So I think, you know, Scott Snyder is about to start in on his own Dark Knight. His own Dark Knight. You know, he's done his Batman Begins, which was his Court of Owls one, and now he's going to do his Dark Knight. So I'm really looking forward to the next 12 issues after that. Just a couple of other ones I read this week. Gambit number 1 came out this week.
I've actually got that. I haven't had a chance to read it yet. What's it like?
I wouldn't rush towards it. So it's It's like, you know, Gambit was such a huge character, particularly in the 90s. Like, I mean, everybody, he was almost on par with Wolverine for just popularity at one point.
Interestingly,
you know?
Enough, though, he's never been one of my favorites.
No, like, I mean, he's kind of got cool, and I like the whole, New Orleans thing. I like the fact that he can charge things up in his hand, like cards or whatever, and explode them. But this kind of, and he rejoined the X-Men a couple of months ago in, I think it was in Astonishing X-Men, he rejoined. But now they're sort of focusing on him being a thief again, and his whole motivation just seems to be that he's bored. And I think that's going to be the reaction of most readers. It's just like, if you're not really into Gambit, you're just going to be bored by this book. So don't rush out to get that one. The two books I would say go out and get this week, apart from Batman, which is just awesome, Punk Rock Jesus issue 2.
Loved issue 1, haven't read issue 2 yet.
Issue 2, just as good. And I really don't know where this book's going, which is the thing I love about it. We're a third of the way through this miniseries, and I think it's just I have really no idea where Sean Murphy's taking this thing. It's this issue 2 is 6 months on.
Oh, okay.
And it's kind of we're getting an idea of who all the players are and what their motivations might be, and, you know, what other things have happened as a consequence of this, you know, alleged miraculous birth. You know, so it's just a, like, you know, for people who aren't familiar with the first issue, it's about this group of people, the J2 Project, which was the attempt to clone Jesus from the Shroud of Turin and impregnate a virgin. So she, all in aid of a reality TV show called the J2 Project.
It's Big Brothers with the baby Jesus, basically.
Not too distant future of 2019. And really, this is exactly how the world would react to this sort of thing. I mean, Sean Murphy's got it like bang on to right. So he knows exactly what he's writing. He's got, and he doesn't just skewer like the fundamentalists either. He skewers everybody. So he's really, really, really writing this thing well. Another one this week that came out that's really, really fun is It Girl and the Atomics. Most people who read Madman, which is a Mike Allred book, will know about the Atomics. He also did Red Rocket 7. It's a group of beatnik hipsters who got superpowers. And it's a lot of fun. This one's not actually written by Mike Allred. This first issue is written by Jamie S. Rich, who did a series called Spellcheckers. And it's drawn by Mark Norton and not by Mike Allred, because Mike Allred was the writer-artist on the original series. And this is basically saying Madman is and the Atomics are off in space with Red Rocket 7, and It Girl has to look after the city. And it's just so much fun. Like, it's a real retro throwback book, and he somehow managed to write it so that, you know, people who aren't familiar with the character can just jump in straight away, and if you are, there's lots of little references there. So it's just a really fun book to check out. And another Image book. Image can't do any wrong this year, I don't think.
Well, not only can't they do any wrong, they seem to just have an infinite amount of material to pump out. They're just pumping out number ones like a rate of knots.
Oh, left, right, and center. I know. Like, it's so much. I mean, look, I mean, they were kind of the standout ones this week as well. I mean, I also checked out Spider-Man 4, which has got a really, really good story with Peter, the alternate Aunt May, and the alternate Gwen Stacy. It's a really beautiful little book, worthwhile checking out. Although I'm a little worried about the pacing of this book, because we're now 4 out of 5 issues into Spider-Man, and they're going to have to pack a lot into Spider-Man issue 5 in order for this thing to wrap up next month.
Or they'll go the Marvel way, which is that it won't actually conclude, because it'll actually be an intro to another miniseries that's coming out.
We haven't heard of anything coming up yet, so I don't know.
I don't know. It's the way Marvel's been doing everything lately.
You're right. That's exactly what they're going to do. This happened with Avengers Extinction.
And it also happened with Fear Itself. And it's
now with AVX, because that's going to lead into Marvel now.
Speaking of AVX, that's what I actually read this week. I actually read the most recent issue of Avengers versus X. Avengers versus X-Men, I actually quite enjoyed it. It didn't feel quite like they were deliberately just trying to space time out this time. It actually felt like things were happening. But what I really liked about it was a really good Spider-Man issue. And I don't know if you've actually had a chance to read it yet.
Yeah, that the Spider-Man issue was terrific. I loved that because he takes on that kind of mentor role with Hope as well.
Yeah, and then he gets pummeled by Colossus and he never loses his sense of humor.
How is that? That is like one of the best hero moments in a book for ages.
No, it's brilliant. I sat there reading it going, wow, this is, and I love the fact that even his description bubbles have blood splatters on them.
It's just a great note. It's probably one of the best Spidey issues in ages as well. It's just in any title. I mean, he's got about 3 or 4 titles running at the moment. But yeah, just the fact that there's all these superpowered dudes who are like way bigger and tougher than him. It's an issue, I think, where we see, you know, Thor getting the crap beaten out of him.
Mm.
And yet Spider-Man just goes, right, no, you guys go off. I've got this. You know? And I know I might die, but I've got this. And it's just, you know, it's a real hero moment. No, I really love that. That was probably one of the few times. If they'd done that sort of 3 issues ago, I would have said, well, this book's, you know, doing no wrong. But unfortunately, we've had to wait until issue 8 or something for that to happen.
Do we know how many issues there are in this series yet?
I think it's 12.
Right. Okay, 12. That would make sense. All right.
Because we're now about 3/4 of the way through.
I'm saying and now is not that far away.
No, because it's every 2 weeks. Yeah. So yeah, no, look, it's been a big epic thing. It's going to lead into Marvel now, but you know, I've stopped caring about it in many ways. But there's been some good stuff in there.
Well, that's the thing. I keep reading it though, because every now and again you have these moments like this Spider-Man moment where you just sit there and go, "That is really well written. It is really, it's what comic books are all about. It's that sort of level of heroics, and I want more of that."
Yeah, no, look, I mean, if they can give me another 3 issues of that, I'm sold. But it's just not consistent is the problem. David, what have you been reading?
Well, aside from that, the other thing I read this week, Richard, was the Superman book that you talked about last week, the Action Comics. Where he did the surgery with the diamond sharp nail and read all the medical books in one go. And aside from the fact that that was all very stupid, and I love the fact that the doctor's sitting there going, oh, years of medical school gone in 10 minutes. Which I thought was kind of stupid. But the part that I actually wanted to talk about was the fact that we've always known since the beginning of Action Comics started with this New 52 that there was something up with the landlady. She always seemed to know something more than she was letting on. But to have her suddenly just turn into some sort of interdimensional alien being was just a little bit too much.
And this is one of the problems with Grant Morrison. He seems to be dropping in aliens wherever he can. He seems to be obsessed with having some giant alien force just controlling Superman's destiny somehow. Now, I know that there's a bigger story at play here and everything, but I don't know. I'm finding this whole Superman thing a bit weird, and I'm hoping that we do actually go back to some sort of status quo after this first year of New 52, because I'm really not liking any of these new versions of the major heroes.
No, and that's interesting you say that, because our pick of the week this week is also a new version of a hero, and I want to talk about that as well. I'm not sure what DC's doing with its origins at the moment.
And I don't like the way those hamsters are looking at the end of that first episode. At the end of issue 12 of Action Comics either.
Yes, I don't know about that.
They're looking quite shifty.
Let's move into some comic news. What do you reckon?
I think it's about time.
What a scoop! Oh, it's so jaunty.
Well, speaking of Superman, there's going to be the super books are going to have a crossover in the DCU around issue 14. So in 2 months' time, they're going to be publishing a little crossover story called Hell on Earth, spelled H'EL on Earth.
Oh, I see what they did there.
Yeah, is that what they did? That's quite clever. So I reckon there's a character called Hell. Presumably Kryptonian. It's an all new villain culled from Krypton's mysterious past. It's not that mysterious. It blew up, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Can I just ask you a question really quickly about this? Because I'm looking at the page from Comic Book Resources that you sent through to me. Is this the H.E.L. character?
Yes, it is.
He's looking a little bit like Punk Rock Bizarro.
He's got a Punk Rock Bizarro because he's got a backwards S on his shirt. He doesn't. Oh, on his chest, he doesn't seem to have a shirt of any kind. I'm guessing that when Krypton got blown up, he hadn't had time to get changed, so he's been wandering the galaxy shirtless for quite some time.
Be a bit cold out in space.
It is very cold in space. He'd be very alert. But this crossover is going to go from Superboy 14 through Supergirl 14 and into Superman 14. So it's going to bring those three books together. It's sort of a mini crossover series. So not as big as the Court of Owls. More like that one that was done over in Marvel with Daredevil, Punisher. Avenging Spider-Man. Just a quick three-issue crossover,
kinds of crossovers.
Yeah, I don't mind those so much because really you only have to pick up two extra books that month if you're not getting all three. And look, chances are if you're getting Superman and Superboy, you'd probably be interested in Supergirl anyway.
All right, so my question is this. When they do these little three crossover comics like this, usually it means that there's a book that's not selling well and they're trying to use the crossover to help boost the sales from one of the more popular books to one of the weaker books. Out of these three, which is the weaker book?
We could probably go and look at the charts to check this for sure. I can't imagine it's Superman. I imagine that's selling quite well.
I reckon it's Superboy.
I'd say so too. I don't think he's – and honestly, it started out strong, but I don't think it's that good. I mean, I think Supergirl's always going to have – because it's Superman with breasts, let's face it.
Supergirl's awesome too. That's a great book.
It is actually a really good book. I mean, although a well-written book doesn't always mean great sales. I felt that Superboy is the weakest of the three, so I'm guessing that that's the case. And they are starting the action in Superboy, so perhaps it's the middle chapter. Maybe it's Supergirl or Superman. I don't know.
Maybe.
So I don't know. We'll find out soon. But someone who isn't selling out, how's that for segue?
There you go.
is Alan Moore. Now, we know he wanted nothing
to do. Sorry. I just saw the picture on the article.
There is a picture. We've taken this story from a website called Left Lion. It's a UK website, and I'm guessing it's got a political angle to it. But it's also this story was actually linked to, I think, from Bleeding Cool originally. But this is the original article. It's an interview with Alan Moore in Left Lion. It's, as I said, a British newspaper. Now, they were talking to him about him refusing adaptations of his work. And they asked him, I know this is going to be hard to put a figure on, but how much money do you think you've turned down for taking a moral standpoint? And he responded, well, they asked me if they could give me – sorry, no, I won't do that. They asked me if they could give me a huge amount of money to bring these Watchmen prequel comics, which they were going to do anyway, and that was probably a couple of $1 million. I should imagine with all the films it would be another few million. In a way, it's really empowering to do that. You can't buy that kind of empowerment. Just to know that as far as you're aware, you've not got a price, that there's no amount of money large enough to make you compromise even a tiny bit of principle that, as it turned out, would make no practical difference anyway. I'd advise everyone to do it. Otherwise, you're going to end up mastered by money, and that's not a thing you want ruling your life. Money's fine if it enables you to enjoy your life and be useful to other people, but it's something that is a means to an end. No, it's useless.
He does know that he writes comic books, right?
Yeah. Now, I gotta say, I do admire that stance. Like, I do admire the fact that, look, you know, this is obviously something he believed in, and it was a book he wrote many years ago, and he still believes in it enough to not sell out now. I mean, there are countless authors who go, yeah, old comic book I wrote, I'll take the checks, let's go. He's refusing to very publicly refusing to be associated with this. Now, look, you know, there are two sides to this story, but, you know, I kind of got to tip my hat to Alan Moore for turning down $2 million to give it up. Because I think the article that I was referred to this from actually said that Dave Gibbons did take some money to have a quote appear on the Before Watchmen books.
Right. Oh, okay.
So, you know, Alan Moore decided not to.
Look, I can understand him not wanting to take any money and not want to have anything to do with Before Watchmen. I understand that. It's everything else that he does.
All that stuff. The thing is, let's face it, he's not been a writer at the top of his game for at least a decade.
No, but it's the concept of where he won't have his name on movies that are based on his material and stuff like that. And you got to ask yourself, it's that old argument, which is, okay, they're going to make a movie of your stuff. They're going to pay you for it. And it may not be what you originally intended, but your original material is still there.
And you know what? After the Watchmen movie came out, how many hundreds of thousands of copies of that book got sold.
Exactly. And yeah. I look at it and just go, it just seems to me, it just seems petty.
Yeah.
You know, and I can understand the principles of not wanting to go do the prequels because I think they're a bad idea anyway, and I completely understand why he doesn't want to have anything to do with it. But this concept where he doesn't want his name on any of the things that are adapted from his material, he doesn't want to even take the money from them or anything. It's like I sit there and go, you could do something useful with the money.
Mm.
You know, it's like to fight one of your causes or something with the money that you could make on people adapting your stuff, you know? And yeah, your original material is still there. Sometimes I just think he's a little bit of a whack job.
Sometimes.
All right. Most of the time.
Now, speaking of people who are large in the comics world, I think it's time we moved on to this week's movie news because the news is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
The movie news is, unless you've been under a rock somewhere and whilst you were under that rock you were wearing headphones and you'd blinded yourself and of course had no connection to the internet, you would have probably heard that that indie director Joss Whedon has officially signed on to direct the Avengers sequel.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, so now we said, you know, a few weeks ago when they announced all the other films, including Guardians of the Galaxy, that the only, I think you said it, Dave, the only thing they haven't announced is the Avengers 2 at this
point.
And, well, of course, they've announced it. And now, according to MTV, they've announced the date as the 1st of May 2015, that's although no other source is confirming that yet. Although I would imagine that that is the rough, you know, time of the...
I gotta say that date sounds right.
It sounds about right to me too, because I think that he signed a contract, a 3-year contract with Marvel Studios until June 2015.
Right.
Which would give him time to see the movie through to completion and release around the world and then move on with whatever next project he's got. Now, this deal is kind of cool because it's not just him directing The Avengers 2, which will come after Guardians of the Galaxy. So between now and then, we've still got Iron Man 3, Thor the Dark World, Captain America, Winter Soldier, possibly an Ant-Man film, mm-hmm. and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yep.
Between now and then. And then we'll have Avengers 2. But one of the things that says in part of Marvel's official statement is that he will also contribute creatively to the next phase of Marvel's cinematic universe. So you know if the end point is Avengers 2, Joss is going to have his hand on all those films that haven't started production yet.
Absolutely.
These are the things I want happening.
If we remember our history correctly, when he signed on to do the first Avengers movie, he signed on early and he also ghost wrote rewrote the script for Captain America.
That's right. So I would imagine that will certainly be one of the scripts that he'll be ghostwriting because it hasn't entered production yet. This is unbelievable news to start with, and that would have been enough for us. Even more exciting is that they also announced that he will help develop a new live-action series for Marvel Television at ABC.
This is the part that I'm so excited about.
Now, I'm very excited about this too. Now, Joss Whedon's got some experience in television.
Yeah, a little bit.
Just a little bit. Now, can we just say Buffy, Angel, Firefly, Dollhouse.
And Dollhouse, yep.
You know, on web series, Dr. Horrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know. He is probably one of the people who has redefined genres on television on a regular basis. and he's going to do it now for a Marvel TV show. There's nothing about that that isn't cool. What I'm guessing, and I want to call it now because so I can say told you to the rest of the world later, is that that long-rumored Jessica Jones series based on the Alias comic might be Joss Whedon's TV show.
And it would make so much sense. She's an empowered woman. And it's got its roots firmly planted in Avengers world.
And not only that, it actually touches on all of the Marvel Universe without necessarily involving the characters directly, which is exactly what you need to do in a Marvel TV show, because they're not going to be able to have, you know, Robert Downey Jr. doing cameos necessarily.
Although, if it is Joss Whedon's series and it is Marvel Productions and it is all tied in together, I wouldn't even put it past them to have the occasional cameo.
They'll probably have the occasional cameo, but there wouldn't be a regular thing. It wouldn't be like, right, I'm off for the Avengers at HQ because it's Tuesday. you know, it's not going to be a regular series thing. But yes, you're right. They could probably, you know, have a big pilot episode where they do it, or they could have a, you know, a turn up. And, you know, people will turn up throughout it, surely. But the beautiful thing about Alias, and this is one we covered, and I looked this up all the way back in issue 2 of Behind the Panels, our very second episode.
Yeah.
We did Alias, and as we mentioned then, you know, Jessica Jones has all these contacts within the Marvel Universe, but often either they're sort of second stringer heroes, or when she does meet one of the big people, it builds up for a long time, you know, and the end of that arc is either maybe just a really glaring reference to, say, Captain America or something.
Well, I was about to say, if you remember, the very first arc of Alias is she's hired to uncover or find a videotape which has Steve Rogers in a compromising position where you can see changing, and she has to recover this video, blah, blah. And then the very end of that arc, she meets Steve Rogers.
She meets Steve Rogers, but not Captain America.
That's right.
There's a possibility maybe for Chris Evans to pop up briefly at the end of that. So,
yeah, absolutely. I think it's such a clever idea. This would be the perfect series for them.
Yeah, no, undoubtedly. And I think that it'd be just what Marvel Universe needs, just to tie all those things together. And it's a way to keep the Marvel Universe front of mind in the 6 months between films as well.
Absolutely.
So I'm very excited about every part of the story, and I want it to happen right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I want it on TV this fall.
Cool. Meanwhile, DC announced they've still got that Superman movie coming out next year, and Dark Knight Rises is still in theaters.
Yeah, DC's really struggling on the media front. They really are.
Look, you know, they've got, as I said, Dark Knight Rises still in theaters. Big film. A lot of people loved it. The whole series is phenomenal. They've got Arrow starting on television this week, and this is one area where DC has been more successful than Marvel in the past is live action TV shows. Of course, they've had
They had Smallville, which was ten seasons. So
yeah, for 10 years, they're obviously doing something right. They're doing Arrow. They have failed to start a few series along the way, but they have made pilots, which is you know, for things like Wonder Woman and Aquaman and so
forth.
Also,
remember, they also had very, very big success going back a few years with things like Lois and Clark and stuff like that.
I mean, yeah, exactly. They've always done strong series, even when they've been a bit camp. You know, even if you go back to the Wonder Woman series of the 70s, a very popular show.
Hmm.
You know, and it didn't get necessarily cancelled because the ratings were low. Apparently, the network just didn't want to be seen as the superhero network because they had too many of those things happening at once. So, unfortunately, Wonder Woman got the axe. So, it's not as though they haven't had experience adapting these things for a serialized format in the past. I think the trick is for DC to now build that cinematically, and all indicators that they're pushing for a 2015 release of Justice League. Unfortunately, that's going to be around the same time.
Didn't we have a rumor for a Justice League director this week?
They did. The rumor for the Justice League director, I don't think this is happening, was Ben Affleck.
Oh, that's right. I read that, but it was debunked like yesterday or something like that.
Yeah, it was debunked relatively quickly. But Ben Affleck, I know, so it would have been a Good Will Hunting by way of Justice League. We were joking about this on Twitter all week. You know, it's kind of like you can imagine the sort of touchy feely movie that Ben Affleck. Ben Affleck's actually a really good director.
He's a good action director. I mean, The Town had some good action stuff in it. So.
The Town's terrific. He's got a new one coming out called Argo, in fact, the writer of Argo is the same writer who's apparently doing a Justice League film.
It's probably where the rumor started.
That's where the rumor started. And apparently Ben Affleck read the script, but not for the purposes of directing it. And I don't know whether it's maybe just Greg I can't remember the name of the writer, but he, you know, maybe just said, hey, Ben, I'm I've just written this thing. Are you interested? maybe that's just like, you know, Ben Affleck reads script for Justice League. It's like I did because he handed it to me.
You got to really be careful what you do in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah. You know, don't read anything because it'll hit the trades. It's interesting, though, how many trades every week, and someone's been doing statistics for this, you know, how many exclusive reveals that Variety has versus Deadline versus The Hollywood Reporter, you know, and how many of them actually all gel up. Like, you know, all three of them will run an exclusive about the same story having a completely different thing. And in fact, Variety and Deadline were having a bit of a war of words over the, I don't know, which story was it? It was over the Fox.
The Fox negotiations about Daredevil.
About Daredevil and Fantastic Four. And both of them were claiming that inside sources were saying completely different things.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, you have to take all these rumors with a grain of salt until you get an official announcement. In fact, when the Joss Whedon announcement came out for the story we were just talking about, Marvel Studios were very quick to issue a statement not long afterwards to say, yes, it's true, because the actual story came out at a Disney shareholders meeting where Bob Iger just said, yes, and we've had a very successful run with the Avengers, and Joss Whedon will be returning to direct a second film for us as well as a TV series. And that Marvel Studios very quickly issued a statement saying, yes, Joss is definitely on board and he'll also write these other things. So I think that's what you've got to wait for, that official confirmation from the studio to say so. When Warner actually says, yes, we're doing a Justice League film, because they haven't announced it yet.
No,
it's still
no.
All different conjecture. Then we'll know. But until then, Marvel have planned out their next five films.
Two further points on this. I like that at the bottom of this Variety article, it says that ABC is still developing the reboot of the Incredible Hulk series with Guillermo del Toro. So we could end up with two Marvel television series, and hopefully they're connected.
You hope so.
And the second thing that has just occurred to me while we're sitting here talking is, how much money did they pay Joss Whedon?
Well, because they're notoriously stingy.
Yeah, but they just made $1.5 billion off of what he did, and everybody praises him. And you got to think to yourself, they want to secure him for the next 3 years. How much money did they pay him? You know,
my feeling is that some of these guys took some massive pay cuts to do the Marvel films. They had to have been getting points, you know.
Yeah,
he would have got a percentage of that film.
Oh, I had no doubt. And I think what he got paid for the Avengers probably was quite low, with a lot of points. But I'm wondering what they're now going to pay him for Avengers 2. It's like Robert Downey Jr. is now paid a lot more for Iron Man than he was at the beginning. You know,
and this, don't forget, this is a 3-year exclusive deal with Marvel Studios. So, Joss Whedon is got his head completely in the Marvel game for the next couple of years.
Exactly.
So
I think they have
bought Joss Whedon. This is someone who makes movies while he's making movies.
Yeah, exactly. And they're talking about him possibly producing and developing television show plus ghostwriting other scripts. He's got to be rolling in it. This has got to be one of the sweetest contracts going around at the moment.
I would imagine he's got one of those giant Scrooge McDuck-style money bins, and he's just jumping off a diving board and straight into it.
And what I love about Joss Whedon is he'll never say.
No, he probably never will. No, he will. He'll say it on Whedon-esque, but it'll be like couched in complete surrealism.
Yes, exactly. and you won't know if it's actually true or not, because he makes a joke out of everything.
Exactly right. So, look, no, wonderful news. And honestly, I'm a DC fanboy, but film-wise, Marvel have done everything right for the last 6 years, and they're going to look like they're going to keep doing it for the next 3 years. So,
absolutely. And I can't wait for Guardians.
Oh, yeah.
The film that I was a complete skeptic on, and then I read it, and now I can't wait for it.
Now I know how they're going to do it. Now I know how that movie can be made.
Yeah, exactly. And you know damn well that Joss is going to have his hand in that script.
With the comedy and the dialogue, you know he'll be ghostwriting that dialogue.
Yeah, he has to, because he's the only one who could handle that sort of ensemble.
Here's a question, David. Who do you think would be a good director for that?
I've been pondering that, and I actually don't know. I actually would say Joss Whedon.
You can just direct all of them. Yeah,
just let him direct everything now for the next 3 years. now, he would be the perfect director for it because of the ensemble nature of it. I actually don't know who I would get to handle it at this point. I would have to ponder this further.
Brett Ratner, obviously.
No. Oh, God.
No, they're going to go with, I reckon, they're going with an unknown writer. So whether or not they sort of do a similar thing with the director as well. Who knows? They might get John Favreau back. I don't know.
It'll be a TV director, I bet.
Probably.
They'll probably get a TV director who handles, you know, they'll probably mine Game of Thrones for another director.
Well, they've used TV directors for Captain America as well, because they've got the Community guys directing that. So they're probably, like any ensemble comedy cast, you know, they might even get one of the Star Trek TV directors, you know, or someone like that who's had that kind of ensemble experience in a Spaceborne epic week after week, you know, someone who's got that solid, that background.
It just occurred to me, do you know where they can go mining? They can go mining for Buffy directors.
Oh, why not? Yeah.
Joss is involved. Go get them.
That's right. Yeah. Who directed Cabin in the Woods? What was his name?
Oh, Drew Goddard. Absolutely.
Get Drew Goddard to do it.
Damn straight. There you go. There can be his next film.
You've solved that, Marvel. If you're looking for someone, go and ask Drew Goddard what he's doing.
Damn straight.
David, I think we've got a book to talk about.
We do.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
And so appropriate.
I knew one day we'd be doing this book, even before I knew what was being written. So I used all those clips from Batman. This is, of course, Batman Earth One by Geoff Johns and Gary Frank. As the back of the book says, a dark night for a new generation. You only think you know his story. Batman is not a hero. He's just a man, fallible, vulnerable, and angry.
Actually, no, now, I know his story pretty well, actually.
And in fact, one of the things, we'll talk about this more as we go on, but in fact, I think we still know his story pretty well by the end of this book. This is part of a series of books, I guess, presumably that we're doing a whole lot of these. Last year, Superman Earth 1, was it last year? Maybe the year before.
I think it was the year before, actually.
Yeah, actually, it was probably a few years ago. Superman Earth 1 came out, and that was J. Michael Straczynski and...
Shane Davis.
Shane Davis. Thank you for looking that up.
Yeah, I've got it right in front of me.
did that book, and that was... That was an interesting reimagining of Superman's origin.
Yep.
This, they've done the same thing with Batman, except the difference is that this is in the wake of the New 52. Now, to start off with, we already have a whole new playground, a whole new sandbox, if you will, for all of DC's heroes. So this book is a bit of a weird anomaly, particularly given that we have an Earth 1 and an Earth 2 existing in the DCU. And in fact, next month, the Batman issue 0 is promising to retell Batman's origin story
again.
So this book is definitely an anomaly in here. So think of this more as an Elseworlds book, where, you know, in the grand tradition of all those books where, you know, things played out the same but slightly different.
Yeah, and if you're a Marvel fan, you could think of it as a what if, you know, and it's like it's that concept where we kind of look at it and go, this is one possible way it could have happened.
Yeah, and look, you know, they've made, it's a lot of similarities, there's a lot of changes, but some of them good, some of them bad. This one basically decides that The origin story is more or less the same. Bruce Wayne's parents are killed in an alley.
Yeah. Well, that part kind of is a constant, you know?
That part's always been a constant. That's one of the things that you can say about Batman's origin that's never changed. His reason, his motivation for tackling crime has always been the same. Now, one of the things that's immediately striking, though, about this book, and we'll talk about it a bit more later, is you can see Batman's eyes.
I was going to bring up this very point.
but we'll talk about that a little bit later, because I think that's a really interesting point. But the story is more or less the same. Batman's killed in the alley. That's what Batman's killing the alley. Batman's parents.
Now that would make for an interesting origin story.
I've just thrown out 70 years with history. Batman is killed in an alley. The end. is basically
it's a two-page book.
It was an odd choice, particularly because it's called Batman Year One. But I thought, you know, it almost works that way. No, but Batman's parents are killed in an alley, and he's this military friend of Thomas Wayne, who is actually Alfred Pennyworth, is asked to look after him. Now, he's ex-military. He's seems to be tough as nails, has a past with Thomas. So immediately that part of the origin story is different. He's not the elderly butler who takes on the role of looking after young Bruce Wayne. He's not, you know, just there to serve. He's not been serving the Wayne generation the Wayne family for generations.
And he's also not. He's also not there to be a servant. He doesn't sit there and just go, "Yes, Mr. Wayne, I'll do whatever you want." He basically backtalks him and tells him he's an idiot.
Yeah, it is a very thing, and it's kind of like it's somewhere in between your traditional depiction of Alfred and what Michael Caine does, where he's a bit more of a geezer, you know, in the last couple of films. But he's certainly one thing he's not, as you say, he's a butler.
No.
And the people, the lawyers basically say, look, either you look after him or he goes into foster care.
Right.
You know, and so he's someone who's forced to look after Bruce Wayne from a very early age. And he's a very different depiction of Alfred than we've ever seen. He's got like a little goatee. He's walking with a cane. He's obviously had some sort of war injury in the past. So it is from the get-go, they're trying to give a little bit of a different flavor there. And to my mind, I'm not sure whether that's enough to make this a different story, whether you needed that.
It didn't work for me. That's the problem.
No, I and this is the other thing. And then meanwhile, you've got and basically, it flips back and forth between what it calls it then and now.
Right.
And you've got Gordon also sort of navigating the mine of politics as well. But otherwise, you start to see this same origin story playing out, and how again you've got, you know, Bruce Wayne scared of bats as a kid. But they introduce this other new element, which is the connection between the Waynes and the Arkhams.
Mm.
Well, which is interesting, but again, I don't think it necessarily adds.
Well, they also introduce the fact that his family is political.
Yes,
which is one of the reasons why they are killed.
Which is one of the implications in the film world as well. Not directly, but the Waynes were far more involved in the gentrification of the city, and that there were other interests at play. That, you know, that there weren't. It wasn't just a random killing in an alley, and that has come up several times in various versions of Batman as well, I should say. But here, it seems to be a very self-serving deus ex machina to kind of shortcut this Batman story into something that it doesn't necessarily need to be. Because we then very quickly fast forward to Bruce Wayne dealing with Mr. Cobblepot, who we know him later as the Penguin, at a gala ball. And the story unfolds from there.
We should point out that Cobblepot is the mayor.
He is the mayor,
and he's the one who beat or basically took over being a mayor from the fact that his parents were killed.
Yeah, and is that as well? But I mean, and at this stage, Bruce Wayne is starting to become Batman in a very tentative way as well. He's not quite the trained up Batman that we see in the first few pages of the book, because most of this is told in flashback. The interesting thing is, as well, they throw in a couple of elements in this as well, because they've also got this serial killer on the loose, which is a very, very strange serial killer. It's like called the Birthday Boy, something along those lines.
That's right.
Yeah, and they've got this is one of the things. They've thrown in all these elements, and for a first book, for an origin story, it's very, very overloaded. I think I said this when I first read this book, when it came out a few months ago, or maybe last month, that there's a hell of a lot going on here for something which is essentially retelling the origin story, but at the same time, it's got a serial killer, a bit of mayoral brinkmanship, and then even the introduction of a brand new character, or not a brand new character, I should say, but a familiar villain in the last couple of pages. Oh, that's right. They even try and work in the origin of Batgirl into this as well a little bit.
Yeah, and we've also got that detective as well who is drawn like a news anchor with that smile.
And that's right.
He's a TV cop or something like that who is now a real cop, and nobody will take him seriously.
And it's Gary Frank, so it's almost drawn the same way as Superman was drawn in that Secret Origins book.
Yeah, a little bit, yes.
And Gary Frank's got this particular art style where everyone's either looking like they're grimacing or smiling at constantly. I love Gary Frank's artwork because I think it's actually quite detailed, and we'll may as well touch on it now, which is something we mentioned briefly before, which is Batman's mask. This is a very early version of the mask. And it's just got eye holes rather than the covered eye sockets, which we see later.
Yeah.
And it's amazing what the difference is.
Well, it actually gives you a sense into Batman, what Batman's feeling. He's no longer just this shadowed figure with white eyes. He actually, you can see his emotions. And I think that's really interesting. It's something I miss it, actually.
It is. It's true. You only ever see it in the mouth now, and they've made Batman such an enigmatic figure now that you never get that sense of anything. As you say, no sense of emotion or what have you. And this story has got a few emotional moments in it, particularly when he walks in and sees the horror of you know what the birthday boy's done and all those sorts of things. But I don't know. There is just too much going on in this book to make it a good book to start with. And as an origin story, I'm not entirely sure that this adds anything to the canon that we already have. I mean, this is meant to be an alternate universe, things that could have happened, but it's not different enough. I mean, if they'd had him, you know, growing up in, I don't know, communist Russia. No, if they had him growing up.
Actually, that's probably my problem. I think you've just hit it on the head, because I really liked Superman Earth 1. And I really liked the fact that it was this kind of out there book where they went completely away from the Superman origin that we knew and basically said, okay, he's from Krypton and he's here on Earth. But as far as Res goes, you're on your own. And basically it had him wandering the country because he didn't know what he really wanted to do and he couldn't find his place in the world. And then it was an alien invasion that actually finally made him take the mantle of Superman and save the day. And I actually really liked the story, and I really liked the fact that we had this outsider trying to find his way. And it wasn't just like, I was raised in Kansas and now I'm Superman. You know what I mean? It's like it actually offered something different to the whole thing. I found with Batman Earth 1 that, yes, the origin is slightly different, and yes, the world is slightly different, and yes, his costume is slightly different, and Alfred is very different, but it's not, none of it is different enough to differentiate it from any other origin story. We know the story too well, and they didn't change it.
And I think that's the problem with a lot of these characters now, that their origin stories are so sacrosanct, they're almost impossible to mess with. In the New 52... they did actually do that with Wonder Woman, and there was an outcry, but they've stuck to it, and I admire them for doing that. With Superman and Batman, not so much. The Superman origin story is a little bit different in New 52, particularly in Action Comics, which is effectively the origin story. But then it's lost its direction as well, because you've got a case where, you know, Superman's now reading medical books and performing complex surgery. It isn't quite where we wanted it to go, but Batman seems to be the only one that they've never, ever, ever tried to mess with. Now, we have, though, some really good alternative takes on the origin story already. We've got Batman Year One, classic Frank Miller book.
Which is awesome.
Which is awesome, of course it is. And, you know, it was recently made into an animated thing. The beauty of that book is that it told that familiar tale, but it gave you a different angle on it, what he did immediately after he decided to become Batman.
And it's the same thing with Nolan's movies as well. It's the same origin story, but it spun it in a way that made it fresh. You know, and so Batman Begins has him going off to the League of Shadows and all that sorts of, and it's all very interesting to see this slightly different interpretation of how he got trained.
See, I'd like to do, if they go back and do this story again, which they will, because they do it every couple of years, I'd like to see it from somebody else's point of view, you know. Maybe tell the whole story from Alfred's point of view. Maybe tell the story from Selina Kyle's point of view, what she was doing in Gotham while this Batman guy was turning up. You know?
Which we kind of get in the New 52.
We do kind of get that in the New 52, and you kind of get it in other books like that sort of, pardon me, sort of spin out of the new, spin out of Year One, which I mean, there was Year Two, which wasn't as good, but they had other books like The Long Halloween and things like that that spun out, which were very early in Batman's career, which were magnificent books. They just looked at an early stage in the career and the introduction to a lot of these villains, you know, early on. They're just really good things. I mean, look, you know, even the stuff that Jeff Loeb and used to do with, you know, like the Daredevil Yellow and Superman Blue, Spider-Man Blue and Hulk Gray and all those kind of things, which were all these almost abstract takes on the early years, which again were just giving that slightly different perspective to it rather than trying to rewrite it or recreate it or redo it. I appreciate the whole idea of the Elseworlds book because I love a good alternate universe story as much as the next person. I love it when they mash up characters, but this as we've already said, it isn't mashing it up enough.
No, as an example, here's a really good example for you. In Flashpoint, when Flashpoint happened, Flashpoint reinvented Batman. Completely different origin story. I mean, we're talking completely different origin story because it wasn't Bruce Wayne. It was his father, and it was a completely different circumstance that actually caused it all. And it was told in three issues, and it was fabulous. And it was just this amazing story because it was dark and gritty and different. And totally showed you what would happen if something completely different, the different motivation took over. And it wasn't necessarily this sense of justice. It was a sense of revenge, you know? And it was a really, and that's what I was kind of hoping for with this book. I was kind of hoping for a completely different take on it. And that's not to say or take away from the classic Batman origin story for the classic books, because those are still going. This is an Elseworld. This is where we can play. And we didn't get a chance to play.
No, and honestly, look, the Birthday Boy was about the only new contribution they made to this, and he's pretty much done with.
Well, it's Birthday Boy and Alfred, I think, were the two biggest things.
And you know what? Alfred is a great character to explore. You know, I'd like to see more of what Alfred was doing before he became Bruce Wayne's, you know, most loyal manservant. I'd be interested. The story I would have been interested in is all that stuff that they alluded to, all of his adventures prior to this.
Yeah.
You know, I would have liked to have seen, you know, Alfred Pennyworth Year One.
Maybe that this book would have actually benefited from being a little bit more linear as well, rather than tell the story in flashback, start from the beginning, show Alfred, come on, and show the training.
Do you think that they were too influenced? Because books like this, when just the timing of this book as well came out just before Dark Knight Rises.
Yep.
Do you think that these books are just too indebted to that cinematic universe, and they're trying to attract an audience who may not necessarily be as familiar with the history of Batman as we are.
I think there's got to be part of that.
But that said, Batman's history is kind of so well known now.
Yeah, but so's Superman, and yet Superman Earth One got to mess with it.
Yeah. And no doubt Man of Steel will as well.
Absolutely. And the thing is, I think that if you tried to release Superman Earth One right on the heels of a Superman movie, people would, there'd be obvious comparison there as well. So I think Superman Earth One had the benefit of being out in a vacuum.
Yeah.
You know, and Straczynski could basically get away with anything he wanted to. And I think the Geoff Johns, and one of the other problems I think we have here is I think Geoff Johns is probably too close to the character.
Geoff Johns is very close to a lot of characters.
Yeah.
He has written virtually every DC character extensively over the last 10 years or so. He was an obvious choice to do this, but maybe they needed someone not obvious. Then maybe they needed someone completely outside the system to say, hey, what do you got?
I would have taken this out of left field. I would have brought in somebody who wasn't as well known for writing Batman or the DC. Maybe even get a Marvel writer in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's good examples and bad examples of this. There was when Stan Lee did his, you know, origin stories of DC characters.
That was terrible. But could you imagine?
Absolutely terrible. But if they'd gotten, you guys just hit Brian Michael Bendis or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You put Bendis in charge and say, look, Bendis, come up with a new origin story for Batman and make it interesting. I'm sure he would.
Yeah. he was grown from the cells of a bat in a government lab or something. I don't know. It was.
I'd be there. The thing is, as long as they kill his parents in an alley, I don't care how he does.
But that's the thing. I mean, there are certain things that you have to do in a bat book, and I wonder if that's too much of a dampener on trying to tell these stories, because there would be you can't. I mean, the whole Batman thing is that his parents were taken by crime, and now he's staging a war on crime. I mean, that is fundamentally
that's the basic concept. It's just like saying, it's like taking Uncle Ben's death out of the Spider-Man.
Yeah, so Uncle Ben's still there. With great power comes, oh, doesn't matter, I'll tell you later.
You know, it's got to be that sense of it was his sense of responsibility. He let his uncle down by being the schmuck that he was. His uncle died, and that's what drives him. It's that guilt.
Yeah.
You know,
that's one thing that they do kind of get right in the new Amazing Spider-Man film, which was that they had that bit right. And regardless of what they did and what they changed in that film, that was one of the things that they stuck to. And the reason that the Batman Begins film worked so well was because we got to see all those mixed emotions that Bruce Wayne went through as the result of his parents being killed. And it wasn't that easy transition for him to go, right, I'm off to be Batman now. You know? And this book, it takes those it's kind of like in the original comics, you only had, you know, back in the 40s and 30s, you only had a handful of panels to tell an origin story.
Mm.
You know, that's all you got. That's why all these origin stories are so simplistic. But in their simplicity, we've managed to spin out, you know, 70 years worth of stories out of some of them, 80 years in some cases, and retell those stories in new ways. I mean, all of those stories, you know, whether it's Green Arrow year one, whether it's Batman year one, whether it's Superman Secret Origins, they're all just doing variants on those basic themes. But I think the problem is when you try and overcomplicate it and try and get too clever with it, you end up second guessing what it is that made those things successful in the first place.
No, I agree. Yeah. I think you've got to make the choice whether you're doing a straight retelling of the origin story, a la something like Secret Origins, or are you going to do something like Earth One, which is where you take it for a spin and see what happens. And I think Straczynski was much more successful with his Superman than Johns was with his Batman.
Having said all that,
it's not a bad book, and it's beautifully drawn.
Yeah. I mean, Gary Frank has, you know, excelled himself in this.
Hmm.
He has drawn a really, really beautiful Gotham. He's drawn a terrific Batman. And as we said, those eyes are amazing.
Hmm.
He's drawn, and even when the birthday boy first walks in.
I'm actually looking at that panel right now. I'm getting vague remembrances of Welcome Back, Frank, with the Russians.
Yes. Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I thought of. Yeah. He looks exactly like a Garth Ennis character. Sorry, showed Steve Dillon, the way Steve Dillon would draw a character, that big sort of imposing, particularly because he's this giant guy in a little striped shirt.
Yes.
Wearing a party hat. he doesn't look too far off the Russian.
A little tiny party hat.
Yeah. definite shades of the Russian in there as well. Yeah, no, I think if they'd done that, if they'd gone completely, batty with this, and actually had done that sort of completely ridiculous, over the top, kind of Garth Ennis style book. If they got someone like Garth Ennis in to do the origin story of Batman,
there's the book I want to read.
That would be fascinating, because it is, in both of those cases, Garth Ennis has dealt with a character who had his family violently taken away from him,
mm-hmm.
But has found that angle to make the incredible violence of the book and the incredible violence of the lifestyle he's chosen not only a source of humor, but a source of great warmth and family in there as well, and this new family that he found and how that came about. I think when you think about Batman, and they raise this in I think it's Batgirl at the moment, the fact that she said essentially a night after, she said, am I really making a difference going out and breaking the arms of muggers, you know, because it's a really violent solution to, you know, a couple of cars that get stolen from people who can probably afford to buy new ones, you know. And she said, is that really what this is about? Or is this more for me, you know? And I think these are vigilantes who are going out beating people up because they're breaking the law.
Yeah.
And I think you have to find at some point in there, you have to find the humor in that. Otherwise, it's just the silliness of the concept comes out.
Or alternatively, you have to take Batman in the right direction, which is where it becomes a great detective story. And the problem is this doesn't quite get to the detective story.
And I think so few Batman books do detective stories very well, which is one of the great things about Scott Snyder's run. He made him a detective again.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what he's supposed to be known as, the world's greatest detective. You know? And we seem to have lost that over the last few years.
Yeah, and I think that even Grant Morrison's run, and for all of his problems on the Superman stuff, in Batman Incorporated, he's following a mystery through. You know, and they're the best books. Hell, even the 60s Batman TV series, every week there was a little mystery.
Holy guacamole, Batman.
Exactly. Holy Missy Potato Chips, Batman. You know, it would be something new every week that they'd have to solve, you know. And I think, in essence, this is a serialized book. You have to have a mystery for people a serialized format. You have to have a mystery for people to unravel. Now, this is, of course, an original graphic novel, so a completely, slightly different structure. And I think that's the other thing that I have a problem with. This is a graphic novel, an original graphic novel, so it's, in some senses, meant to be a complete book, but it still feels like issue one of something.
Exactly. And then I look at it and I go, this book is 143 pages long. And all I can think is Ratcatcher was about the same length, and that told a really good detective story.
Really good detective story that was three times as complex as this, but didn't lose any of those strands. And every one of those strands had somewhere to go. Here, there just seems to be stuff to make up pages.
Well, here it's like, what can we hit on the next panel?
Yeah. It is, and it's just when you sort of get to fan service, you know. Look, I went and bought a copy of this in the hardcover. It's a beautiful little hardcover book. I quite like having it on my shelf because it's the artwork's lovely, and the cover alone is a lovely thing. Just that iconic image of Bruce and a young Bruce and Alfred standing in the rain with a shadow of the bat in the background.
Yeah,
it's just a strong image for the cover of this book, and there's artwork like that all throughout it. But story-wise, as we've said, there's some massive problems in there that I don't think I'm ever going to get over. But it would be interesting if Johns goes on to tell Batman Earth 1 Book 2 the same way that they're doing with Superman Earth 1.
Mm-hmm.
They're going on to continue that story. If he does a second book, maybe the two volumes together will give us more of a more of a cohesive story, the same way that I had problems with The Dark Knight Rises, but taken together with the other two films, it's a nice, complete saga.
Yeah, the only thing that worries me is, like, I'm actually a little bit worried about Superman Earth one, book two as well. Though,
because, I'm having worried about having to say that.
It's getting a little bit complicated because they are these little kind of standalone graphic novels, and they should be just a standalone graphic novel, a little bit like, let's say, Red Sun. You know, and you sit there and go, it's a great tale, and it can be told, and it's done. Or Batman Noel. You know,
you see that's a great example. Batman Noel or Joker, great examples of original graphic novels. And I think it gets harder to tell great original stories about existing characters, regardless, because you know you've been doing Batman stories for 70 years. There's only so many stories you can tell. But particularly when all the good, you can't use too much of the good stuff if you want to keep it in continuity, because you don't want to mess with that. And they don't seem to be willing to go far enough out of the way to completely break from continuity, because this book isn't marketed as an Elseworlds book in any way. It doesn't say the same way that the old Elseworlds book used to have a big Elseworlds logo on them saying it's in a world not quite like ours, you know.
Yeah.
On there. This is meant to be, you know, are we to believe that this is the new origin story for
I don't think so. 52. I think the mere fact that we're calling it Earth One kind of puts it in its own place, you know what I mean?
I mean, they do say it's a dark night for a new generation. You only think a new story, but you know, the things like Bruce Wayne's thirst for vengeance fuels his mad crusade, and no one, not even Alfred, can stop him. That's not Batman.
That makes him sound like a psychopath.
It does. You know, it's not vengeance that fuels him. It's justice.
That's right.
You know, and I think that's the distinction that Nolan's first film strongly made. That he wanted vengeance at first, but it's actually justice that he sought. And once he made that distinction himself, that's why he was able to push away Ra's al Ghul and say, actually, no.
Batman was born, absolutely.
Batman was born when he was able to say, no, that's not what I want anymore. This is what I want.
The other book that's fascinating me at the moment, we're talking about standalone graphic novels, was it Batman Through the Looking Glass? Have you seen this?
Yes, I did. I had a quick read through that one this week because I've got a copy.
We're going to have to put this on the list at some point, I think.
Look, Sam Keith, the way he draws Batman is phenomenal. He just draws these really twisted imagery. Anyway, this is someone who has written a number of terrific books over the years, and this particular one, Burn Through the Looking Glass, it's just full of surreal imagery. That's how you write a Batman standalone book. It's taking the character and putting him in a situation which is completely unlike what he normally goes through.
Absolutely, and this is what made Noel work, and this is what made Joker work. Was the fact that we took something that we know and we turned it on its head and said, let's try something completely different with this, and you watch, see how you go. You know,
because there's no point in telling a story unless you learn something new about the character, and if the things that you learn new about the character are incongruous with what you already knew, then that doesn't work. But if they you know, give you something more. So it's like that book I was talking about at the start of the show, when what we've been reading, that new issue 12 of Batman that Scott Snyder's written. It's not about Batman specifically. It's about this other character. But through that, we actually learned all the stuff about how much Batman's been doing for, or Bruce Wayne's been doing for the city without anybody knowing about it. And I'll let you read that thing. I won't spoil it because there's a really lovely couple of moments in that book. But that would be great. If this book was told, as I said, from somebody else's perspective, we may have gotten an idea of you know, what made him tick at this early stage, rather than just the same old stuff about him having to go through training again, about him, you know, standing in the rain looking miserable. You know, it's just the same. it's the same book with a different sheen to it. And unfortunately, I've read this book dozens of times.
Agreed. Look, worth having a look at, just don't expect it to change your world.
Exactly right.
Yeah. I will say one last thing on this, though, which is, what the hell's with Lucius? He's about 12 years old.
Yeah, I know. When I was just flicking through this again, I was trying to work out the chronology of this, because I thought, was that a flashback or what? No, Lucius is about 12, and maybe you know, being biased too much by the films, because I can't remember the character of Lucius too much in the comics, but obviously in the films, he's a much older man than Swain's. But here he's like this geeky whiz kid.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how old he was in the original comic books, but I'm sure he wasn't as young as this.
No, and I think that's what the only thing this book is, you know, changes that it does make. It's kind of like, hey, what if we made Lucius a kid and Alfred an ex-army guy with a beard? You know,
so brilliant,
brilliant. Print it, but it's not. It's kind of like changes for the sake of them, rather than actually, you know, making having a reason for the change. Like if you made Alfred an ex-army guy, it's because he, you know, had this thing to give him, or he originally met Thomas back, and you know, however, you know, you wanted to do it. Just to change his character so you can justify calling it new is not original. It's just playing, really.
I think the most striking thing about this entire book, we've said it before, we'll say it again, I think the thing that makes this book probably absolutely essential reading is just his eyes.
Yeah. And you see that even in the front cover, just the haunting eyes that are just hanging over them there. Absolutely right, and I think that is actually a stylistic choice, which I would like to see coming back into the main books, because that kind of blank-faced Batman looks cool, and it does reinforce the idea that anybody can be Batman if you eat Bix and work hard enough.
Well, they also have reasons for it, because they actually talk about the fact that he's got infrared in there and stuff like that, so he can basically, they're lenses. He sees the world through lenses, and he can basically switch over. But there is something about having his eyes.
Mm.
It makes him human.
If only you could see what I've seen with his eyes.
Okay, on that note, I think we need to go. If you start quoting Blade Runner, I think it's time to go.
Ridley Scott's Batman Earth 1.
What's next week's book?
Next week's book is I've completely forgotten. Next week's book is a completely different type of original graphic novel. This one is Pedro and Me by Judd Winnick. Judd Winnick is now a big superhero comic book writer, but back in the day, he first came to prominence writing this book, Pedro and Me, about a friend of his who died of AIDS.
I'm fascinated to read this.
It's a powerful book. And we look forward to talking about it. And I know it sounds like a really depressing book, and it sounds like something that would be a slog to get through. But trust me when I say it's a beautiful read, and I really look forward to sharing this with you all next week.
Excellent, excellent. And remember, when you think, you know, we've just about hit the bottom of depression, just go back and remember we did Mouse.
Yeah, we're not. I don't think we're ever going to top the Holocaust
I don't think so. So let's read Pedro and Me, and we'll do that next week. I'm looking forward to this book. I haven't actually read it yet, so I'm going to sit down and read it over the next couple of days.
It's a quick read, but it's a good one. So, and this is, if you're looking forward, it's available as a trade paperback. Look, if your bookshop's got an independent comic section, or your you're looking for the graphic novels, just most places should have this. It's been in and out of print, so you might have to look around in some places for it, but I think it's back in print now.
Fantastic. Well, I think that brings us to an end, Richard.
Thank God. We've been plagued with technical difficulties.
Yeah, well, one second. We should apologize. So throughout the show, you would have heard us going up and down in levels and dropouts and stuff like that. We pieced this together as well as we could. I don't know what's going on with internet connections today. So
there was a fist fight that broke out in the middle. I had wolves running through. I was distracted by women falling off the pommel horse in the gymnastics.
Floods, tornadoes.
Dogs and cats living together.
But we kind of pulled it together in the end. So I hope it wasn't too painful, and hopefully next week's will be a lot cleaner like they have been in the past. Richard, where can people find more are you on the internet?
You can find me on the internet at therealbits.com. Then you have permission to die. You can also find me at Twitter at DVDBits.
Thank you so much for that, Bane. Well, I don't know what happened to Richard, but anyway. And you can find me at Geek
Action. I destroyed him.
Put him in the pit. You can find me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh. Oh, dear. It's time to go. It's getting late. We also have an email address for this show. You can write to us. You send your feedback to comics@geekactually.com or put posts up on our Facebook page, which is what, Richard?
Hello? The Facebook page is facebook.com/ behind the paddle.
Oh dear, you pretty much nailed Bane.
Not something you'd want to do.
Whoa, oh, I wasn't going there. Dude, I will catch you next week.
I'll see you then.
And I might be here too.
Bye now.
Bye now. Welcome back to issue 38 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that's feeling awfully lonely up. Oh, Jesus Christ.
What's a lonely?
And welcome back to issue 38 of Behind the Panels.
I was wondering if you were going to get through it.
And welcome back to issue 38 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that gets awfully lonely up here. Oh, Jesus Christ. And welcome back to... Oh, Jesus. I didn't even get it. Oh, I'll get this. Hang on.
That was brilliant. I think we got our blooper for the end of the show.
Oh, I really have to do this because it's late. I'm tired and there's gymnastics on.